Welcome to Local Talk Wednesday on KHOY Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in our seven-county listening area in central Iowa. I am one of your hosts today, Pat Schlarbaum, and I'm here with co-host Susan Franson. And Susan will be joining us shortly. But in the meantime, I'm glad to have the opportunity to introduce Carolyn Raffensperger, who is the Executive Director of the Science and Environmental Health Network. And today we're going to learn about Carolyn's views on justice. And these are just a welcome segment during our pandemic radio show here at Local Talk. Here's Carolyn Raffensperger. Well, Carolyn, it's a beautiful day, as they say, in the neighborhood. How are things in your home?
Troubled. Deeply troubled. You know, the sun is shining today. It hasn't shone in a long time. But what I'm keenly aware of today is that it's Election Day.
Election Day Tuesday, this to air on Wednesday.
Yeah. And so as we're thinking about, you know, I'm speaking to you on Election Day, and people are heading to the ballot box and to polling places. And, you know, it gives rise to the question of what's government for? You know, when I scan what's happening in the world, we have a pandemic going on right now. We have racial injustice that has risen up and shown of its face. And we have a world that is being damaged ecologically, and that's showing its face as well. And so the question that I invite you to consider as a listener is, what is government for? I've been volunteering with the Sierra Club for quite a while. And over the last couple of years, we've looked at things like the state budget with two ideas in mind. So if you argue that government is primarily to grow the economy, then you're going to do things like give major transnational corporations, you know, tax incentives and tax credits, and you're going to keep minimum wage way too low to support a person or a family. And if you are going to say that government is primarily for economic growth, then you will sacrifice the earth and all the things that our lives depend on for the sake of money. And it seems to me that Iowa, with its filthy water and with its ravaged prairies and rivers, has shown what that premise will do. And I think the injustices that we've seen with our black brothers and sisters is also part of that argument that government is supposed to grow the economy. And so we build the economy on the backs of the poorest. We build it on the back of the earth. And we do not treat the earth or our neighbors with justice. That's what I'm thinking about this morning. But there's an alternative.
Yeah.
There's an alternative. And if we thought of government as responsible for the commonwealth, the things that we share, and for public health, we've become quite aware of how my health depends on my neighbor's health, and that if my neighbor is sick, I am likely to get sick as well. And that government has a duty to take care of all the things we share. So what do we share? We share roads and bridges. My family farms in North Dakota. But we cannot get our crops out to market but for public roads. We, you know, the sidewalk in front of the restaurant is part of that commonwealth. The parks that we go to, Ada Hayden, the beautiful state parks that have been given to us as our inheritance by past generations. Government's responsibility is to care for those for the purpose of the well-being of people and the earth. And that without the well-being of the earth, we don't have the well-being of people either. And justice is absolutely essential for government to fulfill its responsibility for the well-being of the earth and its people. One of the things we know about public health is that there are lots of causes of problems in public health. So one of the best stories in the field of public health is about a cholera epidemic in London in the 1800s. And a doctor traced that epidemic back to one water source. And he took the pump handle off the pump that supplied water for that neighborhood. And the cholera epidemic ended. And so when I look at government's responsibility for taking care of the well-being, that's an extraordinary story. And what we know is that many causes, so we know right now that things like viruses can cause pandemics. We know that the virus probably originated in encroaching food systems on wild lands, and that if we protect wild lands, we're less likely to get these diseases that cross over between species. But what we know is, in addition, that the social determinants of health are actually probably the strongest indicator of whether you will die young, whether you will have chronic diseases like heart disease and other cardiovascular problems. And what we know is that injustice of the kinds that we're seeing played out in the streets and in the news today cause ill health. And when I think about voting today and hearing about the elections in the coming days, I hold a proxy for justice. I hold a proxy for the earth. I hold a proxy for future generations of humans of all colors. And I hold a proxy for the future generations of all species. And when you go to that ballot box, you hold a proxy too. Who do you hold it for? Who are you voting for? And why? You have a choice in governments. And as the next election comes up in November, you can vote for injustice. You can vote for environmental catastrophe. You can vote for more pandemics. Or you can vote for justice. You can vote for ecological sanity, environmental sanity. You can vote to make the commons, these things that we share, healthy and well. And so that's what I'm thinking about. I should add one other thing about this. We don't know how things are going to play out. And there is trouble in this world. We have food shortages right now. We have people who are seeking justice in the streets. We have climate change. We have so many things happening right now. And what I would do, as Mr. Rogers says, is when times of trouble, look for a helper. Be a helper. And that is the source of grace. And I don't mean grace in necessarily the religious sense, but I mean grace in the sense of the unexpected surprise of good, that each action that we take for good, for justice, for health, will in the end add up. So I invite you to add your grain of sand to that pile so that we can bring grace into this world.
And there's also, as you say, voting for, I guess, a cause. How appropriate that is at this time, because we're not going to be able to fix a lot of these challenges through one election. It's going to be a long and deliberate, thought-provoking slog. How much more lessening are we going to have to experience, do you feel?
No one knows.
Yeah,
no one knows. But
what is your sense on where we're at with this current civil unrest?
I think that centuries of injustice, people have said, we've had enough. And we have factors in our political world that are making it worse. And I think to the extent that we can, that we need to take care of our neighbor. We need to make sure that our neighbor is okay in this. Okay. We need to make sure that we do not make things worse in terms of our anger, and I'm speaking here as a white person, mm-hmm. I have an obligation to stand for justice. And so the difference between justice and law, sometimes the law is unfair. The law allowed slavery. That was an injustice. That was a rank injustice. That is how government came about, to think that the economy was more important than people, more important than the earth, was when we said we could buy and sell people. And what we said was, we will not do that. We chose what was right, what was just, in spite of what the law said. And we can do it again. We can stand for justice. The quote from Martin Luther King says, the moral arc of history is long, but it bends towards justice. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to take my hammer and anvil, and I'm going to do all I can to bend that arc towards justice.
Something I might just touch on, because you were very active in the 60s also, the county sheriff of Flint, Michigan, on Saturday took off his riot helmet, laid down his baton, and said, I'm a part of your parade. I'm participating in your march. Do you recall anything of that magnitude occurring in the 60s?
I think we saw it more out of the ministers.
The ministers. And the religious,
and the churches.
Yeah.
And this morning I read a report of one of the ministers, an Episcopal priest, who had been at the church that Mr. Trump went and did a photo op at.
Episcopalian minister, yes.
And he said that they had made that a sanctuary. They had medics there. It was a place of healing and peace. And they tear gassed people so that Mr. Trump could go over there for his photo op. And I think that what we're seeing is that churches in the 60s did their best, added their voices to the civil rights movement. And the civil rights movement, as we know, had many results. Our lives are different because people stood up for justice. And now we have a chance to stand up for justice.
Yeah.
And we will owe reparations. We will owe people reparations for the injustices that are centuries old. And I'm actively arming myself as well. Yeah. I'm arming myself with food and with medical supplies so that when there are massive food shortages, that I will have food to share with my neighbor. Among the most dangerous people is a man who can't feed his children. And, you know, great novels have been written about stealing a loaf of bread because you have no food. And Les Miserables was written about that very scenario. Not about his children, but when I think about how I will use what I have, I will use everything I have to work for justice. I will work for peace in ways that are built on justice. And I'm going to start with food and water.
Yeah.
If you have clean water and you have food, it's a start.
Yeah.
You can get up another day and go on.
Yeah. So you'll be arming yourself with food and water and an open heart to help your neighbors.
To share.
And
yes.
To share.
You know what? There are preppers, people who, you know, build their bunkers and get their guns and,
yeah.
You know, put food in for long haul. And I'm a community prepper.
Yeah.
I'm hoping to create the circumstances where we build community resilience. So everything I'm doing is working for community resilience, which I think is the first platform for grace. So when our neighbor is well fed, when we have clean water, when we have enough so people can pay their rent, so people have work, if they are able, and that it's not demeaning work, and that it is sufficiently remunerated, paid for, you know, that the pay is adequate to support a person and a family, then we can weather hard times. if we have a complete breakdown where people are starving to death, where they can't pay their rent, where we have seen centuries of injustice, then we will have trouble. And if we can begin to build that community resilience, that community justice, that community nourishment and well-being, then we can build our communities and society back up. But we build it on justice.
Thank you, Carolyn Raffensperger, the Executive Director of the Science and Environmental Health Network.
You're welcome.
In case you just tuned in, you're listening to Local Talk on KHOY Community Radio. I'm one of your hosts today, Pat Schlarbaum. Hopefully we'll be joined shortly with Susan Franson. But during last Wednesday's show, we spoke with Betty Andrews about a forum the NAACP was doing about issues facing African Americans in the crisis of COVID-19. We provided listeners with links to these forums on our KHOY website, and when I listened, I learned that they were adding a bonus forum on hate crimes and police brutality. And Susan listened to it, and much of it was about communicating with the predominantly white community, so I felt that the information and insights would be of interest to our listeners. Betty Andrews has given me permission, has given KHOY permission, to broadcast selections from the forum, and I'll let her introduce the speakers. Here's Betty Andrews.
I am NAACP. Welcome to the program. I am Betty Andrews, and I'd like to welcome you to a very important and special forum tonight. This has been our COVID-19 series, What's Next for the African American Community. And we initially started out this series with about 6 forums that we had planned, but because of things that were emerging in our community, we have added this special 90-minute forum. And so we are really happy to be here with you. We are living in a fast-changing world right now. Of course, we're in a pandemic, and we are dealing with struggles as it pertains to race all across this country. We are dealing with the national narrative of Ahmaud Arbery, Breonna Taylor, and of course, many things erupting around the death of George Floyd. And we're looking at the symbolic knee on our neck in the African-American community. So we are struggling. Here locally, we have had a situation where Darquan Jones was attacked and racial slurs were used in his attack. And also our Des Moines branch president, Cameron Middlebrooks, was attacked through cyberbullying and Zoom bombing at a city council meeting. So we are obviously frustrated, stressed out. And then we've had a number of wonderful, peaceful protests, but also we've had some violence and things that have just been tough for our community. So we're at a moment, we're at a special moment right now, and we wanted to talk about it. We are dealing with a legacy of systemic racial issues, a history dating back beyond slavery into the conversation about police community relations and how we can move things forward. And then now I'd like to bring before you, and I call this brother, I call him Godfather, because he is out there. He has been on the front lines. He has been working with people trying to maintain peace in our community. He has also had a history in the legislature lifting up our community and lifting up our community, not just the African-American community, but all Iowans. And so we appreciate this brother. And his name is Akail Abdul-Samad. He is a state representative. He is also the founder of Creative Visions. And we are so pleased to have him. And we're going to ask him to come before us first and bring some context to what's swirling around us right now.
First of all, Betty, thank you for allowing me to participate in this special edition of the NAACP programming. And also, I am honored to be on this with such a distinguished panel. And I'm looking to learn a lot. One of the things that I think that we need to understand that what we're talking about, first of all, is not new. This isn't something that just happened when the virus came. You know, this is a virus that has been with us in America for decades, going on centuries. This is a situation that we saw, you know, in April 4th, 1969, with the death of Dr. King, that we saw that what Dr. King was fighting for on, you know, when the famous Pettus Bridge, we saw Malcolm X, we saw James Baldwin, we've seen a lot of individuals that's been fighting for equality and are fighting against hate crimes, you know, especially against African-American people, but people of color. You know, one of the things that we have to understand that this will not change until we actually begin having some real conversation and we start dealing with the lies that we've been living here in America. You know, America, you know, has written a check to the American people to tell them that we could have voting rights. And at the same time, as soon as it was given to us, then it was majors were taken to take it away from us. You know, today we're fighting for to just keep voting rights. We live in a society that because of these lies, we have individuals that distrust the system. We have young people who distrust the system. And last night we saw that with the pain that young people are going through here in Des Moines that were protesting, you know, against the death, the murder of George Floyd. We see it in the lies that we're always told that we are all in this together. That is something that we have not lived yet. It has been lies because we have not begun to even address from a historical perspective of writing history. You know, we have allowed history to disenfranchise communities as we have taught it. That's not only with minorities, but with women. We have to begin to have some real conversations to be able to address that. We have to begin to say that if we're going to stand up for what is right, then we got to start dealing with truth. We got to begin implementing programs that are systemic and not cosmetic. We have been dealing with cosmetic programming ever since we can remember, from the Black Panther Party to today. Ever since we remember when the NAACP at one time was declared by J. Edgar Hoover as being a terrorist organization. You know, till today, where the NAACP is one of the most nationally known civil and human rights organizations. And I close with the fact that we have to begin to change the terminology, that we have to understand that you cannot have civil rights without human rights. If individuals don't look at individuals as human beings, there's no way they can even understand or implement laws to give individuals civil rights. George Floyd was not given the human rights. You can see he wasn't looked at as a human being. He was looked at as a subject to be dealt with and to deal with as an animal without any respect. We have to understand that's what we have to, again, start dealing with. And if we don't, then we will not resolve our own issues in America. America is a great country. America can make become a leader in the world, could become a leader and not policing the world, but leading the world. In Iowa, we have the opportunity to right many wrongs and become the example for the nation. So again, Betty, I'm looking forward to this conversation. I'm looking forward for us standing up, you know, and having the type of conversation that brings about these systemic solutions and some systemic and invigorating conversation that will allow us to leave this conversation and the audience with saying, I have hope we can get this done and we can do it together.
Thank you so much. Okay. Representative Akail Abdul-Samad. We appreciate those words of context and totally agree. I know that one of the things that you have been talking to us as you have been mentoring leaders as they are coming up, you've been talking to us about making sure that people understand that this is something that can't just be done by the African-American community, that we need all hands on deck, that we need everyone to participate, to take up their role. So we appreciate that. And we appreciate hearing from you. I'm talking about none other than Isaiah Knox. And Isaiah is the director of Urban Dreams Human Development Center. And as you may already know, those of you who are in Des Moines, the center does a lot to support the community and has been doing a lot to help during COVID-19 and continually help. So I just wanted to bring him before us because I know that we're sitting at a table to talk and see how we can support as things emerge when it comes to what's happened to George Floyd and then also the activity that are happening in our community. So I want to appreciate this next gentleman as well, because I know he was there on the ground also. I'm talking about none other than Isaiah Knox. And Isaiah is the director of Urban Dreams Human Development Center.
Thank you so much, Betty. And thank you, everybody that went before me for. And I'm going to talk a little bit about community police relations. But first, I want to give a quick overview of Urban Dreams. I've been the executive director now for 2 years, and we are a full-service outpatient substance abuse treatment center. So we see OWI cases, jail diversion all around the state of Iowa. We also do outpatient treatment and evaluations for substance abuse. We have a mental health counselor on staff that works about 30 hours a week. So right now, her services are increasing dramatically, especially by using telehealth for that service. And we also use telehealth now for the substance abuse, except for the OWI jail diversion classes. The state still does require the 48-hour classes to be held in person. So we are still doing those statewide in person. And I'm going to talk a little bit about community police relations. But first, I want to give a quick overview of Urban Dreams. I've been the executive director now for 2 years, and we are a full-service outpatient substance abuse treatment center. So we see OWI cases, jail diversion all around the state of Iowa. We also do outpatient treatment and evaluations for substance abuse. We have a mental health counselor on staff that works about 30 hours a week. So right now, her services are increasing dramatically, especially by using telehealth for that service. And we also use telehealth now for the substance abuse, except for the OWI jail diversion classes. The state still does require the 48-hour classes to be held in person. So we are still doing those statewide in person. So one thing that we learned that with the community connectivity events, which I'm going to talk about now, we like to involve police officers, first responders, community leaders, and people in the neighborhood. We like to keep them free or very low cost. We mostly now free due to sponsors and grant dollars, and we always involve food. So because of that, we've become an impromptu food pantry, to say the least, and we never were designed to be a food pantry, but now most of our foot traffic is food. So we do over 100 people a day with food, and those families average about 3.5 per household. So quite a few families are getting food from us every single day from our community. So one thing that we do is we like to collaborate. I'm going to share about what we do with our community connectivity. So on a regular year, like 2019, we had over 12,000 people come through our doors just for our substance abuse, our mental health, our workforce, our education departments. But we also, in our community connectivity, served another 15,000 people in the community by doing over 40 events. And our mission has always been to create civic engagement, however that may look. And one of the things we really wanted to focus on was community police relations, because we survey all of our clients that come through, and we found out that most people don't hate the police. They want to either avoid the police, distrust the police, or have some varying kind of animosity towards police officers. So we said, let's get them in a room and let's figure out what we can do on a very, very regular basis, 40 events per year, and hash these things out. And we always try to make them different. Sometimes they're fun events, trunk or treats. Sometimes they're educational events, like some of the forums that we've done with candidates running for office. So they're always something different. They're always with food. Literally, we sat down with Chief Winger and we said, what can we do to get every single officer in our community or throughout a period of time? And we came up with, we stay open for 24 straight hours so that every single officer on a shift that day can come in and eat a meal with people in the community. And the thing is, we're packed the whole 24 hours. And we have food vendors that and restaurant partners that come in and donate food and meals. So they're good meals. They're from places like Jethro's and Smokey D's and Latin King and all these good restaurants from around town. And people are just sitting down having conversation. There's no agenda. There's no program. There's nothing but conversation and food and camaraderie and trying to get to a common space and a common ground. Here's what we're finding. And this has been a longitudinal study that we've done with this question here. How do people feel about the police? And when we first started doing this, that yellow was a lot larger in our community, a lot larger. The avoidance piece is, again, starting to shrink, and the trust part is starting to grow, which is what we were trying to accomplish with this. And I want to tell you about our very first event. Our very first event was a trunk or treat. And we had officers come up and bring their car. And they, if you don't have familiar with the trunk or treat, they open their trunk and they give away candy or stickers or whatever. And I was going around and I was thanking everybody for coming out that day. And it was a full parking lot with community members. And one of the people in the community asked, what are the police doing here? And I said, they're just giving out candy just like you, trying to be a part of the community in a positive way. So over the years, those are the kind of comments that have went away and the trust has grown. And that was part of the reason why I think that it was so easy for both Akeo and I to go and other community leaders that have worked on community police relations to go down there and help diffuse a situation. Because last night, the best part about us being there is that we were allowed by the police to go through the lines, both behind the police line and behind the protest line, back and forth without being stopped or harassed or hassled by either side. Because we built trust in our community over many, many decades. Urban Dreams has been around since 1985. Creative Visions has been around since, is it 1995? I think 10 years after. And Akeo and Wayne Ford have been working on these issues for many, many years. Wayne Ford was the executive director before me at Urban Dreams. So these are really the things that we've been working on and building these relationships, and that all the officers knew us by face down there. So it wasn't a problem for us going back and forth. And then all the people in the community knew us. So we can go over and we can have, as Akeo would say, real conversations on both sides to diffuse issues that were occurring last night. And if you were there, then you know that it was, could have been even way worse than what it was. I was watching it on TV first before I got the call to go down or back down, because we were downtown earlier actually, and everything was peaceful and great. And we were watching people leave and walk away. And about 8:50 or so, my wife comes down and says, you have to see what's going on TV. And Akeo's down here right in the middle of it. And sure enough, not too long later, the mayor called and I was talking to the police chief and we got to get down there. I went down there and we were down there till after 1 o'clock at night, making sure that everything was good. So those are the kind of things, though, that are built up over time. And you have to continue to trust the process in these things, because there's never a quick fix or a magic wand that we can wave and everything is going to go away. We know this, right? Akeo made it a point earlier. It's been going on for centuries. And these are the only ways I think that we can fix the problem, is to be part of the solution all the time.
Thank you. Thank you so much for sharing with us about Urban Dreams, and then also sharing how you and Urban Dreams are working. And it looks like you, I know you're doing a lot of things, but when it comes to police, community relations, you have taken a chunk and kind of drawn around your community and are moving and pushing this particular effort. And efforts like that move that needle. So we appreciate you for doing that. Next up, we are going to move to our Des Moines Civil Rights Director, Joshua Barr. We are very pleased to have Joshua Barr Esquire, who is the Director of the Civil and Human Rights Commission for the Des Moines Human Rights Department. Thank you, Joshua, for being with us, and the floor is yours.
Thank you. I just want to say, in regards to the pandemic, COVID-19, while we were dealing with that, we forgot that we also had to deal with our original pandemic, the other invisible virus of racism. The United States is a republic, and a republic means we operate under a rule of law, but it's also a social contract. When we say all men are created equal or endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that's a social contract with all persons who have the title of American, whether you're a European American, an African American, Latino American, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And for so long, there's a certain group of us, a group of a darker hue. I don't really say white, black anymore, because most people I went to school with that were white use peach crayons to color themselves, and I use brown. So I really use European, and you know that's a fallacy when you know you use color to describe something when you actually aren't that color, because black means negative and white means pure, et cetera. So I really, when I say European American, I want you to understand I'm talking about what people term as white. So in that, but we have a social contract. There are groups that feel like that social contract has been violated, and if you follow and continue along with the Declaration of Independence, you know, people have a right for a redress of their grievances. And we're a republic. That means we operate under a rule of law. And we need to make sure that the law is just for everyone. And so one of the things I really move for at the Des Moines Civil and Human Rights Department is to really move on law and making sure that we have just laws. Now, presently, we just cover employment, housing, public accommodations, your right to a job, the right to a roof over your head, and the right to have access to places that are open to the public. But we've actually strived and moved towards expanding on that. One of the things we did was add source of income as a protected class, which essentially gives persons the right to utilize government vouchers to get housing in other places in the city. And we still have a lot of work to do on making that stronger. But the main thing is we have to engage with community to really address the problems that are affecting us. But the main thing I want to say is local government is where it's at. That gentleman was a police officer. He was a local police officer. Most change starts at the local level, not at the federal level. Martin Luther King did not start out on the steps of the Washington Monument. He started out in Montgomery, Alabama, with E.D. Nixon, Ralph Abernathy, Rosa Parks, et cetera, in the Montgomery Improvement Association. And he moved his way up to the national level, to the national stage. So you have to start at the local level. When federal government shut down in 2019, most people didn't feel it. But if local government shut down tomorrow, nobody's coming to pick up your trash. Nobody's coming to fill your pothole. Nobody's coming to put out that fire. And if there's a crime, the police ain't showing up to put it out. Change starts at the local level. Federal government sends dollars down to the county and to the city to distribute amongst the neighborhoods. So we have to have a voice. You have to know who your city council person is. We have to build those relationships, because policies are actually just a reflection. Policies and laws are just a reflection of belief. And if your policies and laws aren't trying to address the situations of communities that have been typically at the lower end of the economic scale, trying to give them a ladder up and improve themselves, then we have to build those relationships so we can actually together create a more just community. So reach out to your city council persons, have coffee with them. They're actually the most accessible group there is. Senators have recesses and on the federal level and on the state level, but city council open, it's always open. They have meetings every month, sometimes two and three meetings, and they're the policymakers at the local level. Find out who the person is in your ward or district and build a relationship with that person, along with the mayor, who is another person that votes on the city council, and your at-large city council persons, building a coalition of people who can stand up and address the issues of marginalized communities. Join your neighborhood association. Neighborhood associations put a direct line into city council because that's a collective group of people who city council persons know that can vote. So join your neighborhood associations. But we also have to create equitable and just policy. One of the things we've been doing is really, we have a program called Bridging the Gap, an initiative, excuse me. And that's what we do, deliberative dialogues with communities, trying to understand what's happening and what can we do to improve. But again, it's still a process. It's going through a process. Again, we operate under a rule of law. Although the Declaration of Independence was signed in 1776, the Constitution didn't come about till I believe, 1789, because they were fighting. They couldn't figure out what to do. So understand this. These things take time. But if this is the social contract, we want to make sure it's a social contract for all, that all persons have the right to life, that no one can take your life while you begging and screaming to your mother, that you have your liberty, that if I didn't do nothing wrong, I'm free to go, and that you have the pursuit of happiness. Whatever opportunity I desire to seek, there is no barrier that is put in my place by government or private actors to prevent me from being all that I can be. So there are a number of laws that we can reach out to. Anti-racial profiling or required community policing and engagement, reflective workforce mandates where city departments, not just the police department, I'm talking about the engineers and the architects and the transportation as well, have to work to have a workforce that is reflective of the community. That's how you build trust. You also have to have a community incident response team. This situation took place in Minneapolis. However, everyone can learn from that. There's a saying that when there's a crash or horrific incident by pilots, every single pilot gets retrained around the world to prevent that from happening again. Every single woman. That gentleman flew the co-pilot closed the door, locked it, and flew the plane into the mountain. They put practices and procedures in place to make sure that never happened again. And that's the thing. That's the way we have to take persons who have a gun, who since they have a license to kill if they so choose, we have to hold them to that standard. But all persons, I'm not just talking about police. We need to have housing requirements, making sure that their housing situations in place where if you work in the city, we should have incentives for you to live in the city. That's how you build relationships, like Isaiah and Akeel going into and talking to persons and engaging with them because they live in the community, they work in the community, they engage with people in those communities. We thank them for that. De-escalation training, where we don't have to pull out a gun, but you also have to have bystander training and bystander requirements of other police officers. When you see someone doing a bad act, that you can stop them. And if you don't report it, you'll get in trouble. So those are things that you can put in place. Again, I could go on and on, but at the end of the day, I have to say one more thing and I'll shut up. We live, again, under a rule of law, but we also live in a capitalist system, an economic system based on economics. So we also have to address the economic situation. And if we aren't talking about economics, we've already messed up. If we aren't training people on how the stock market works, we aren't educating people on taxes and starting a business, et cetera, we've already cut their legs off. We have to give people in education the opportunity to thrive. We have to create internship and entrepreneurship programs, giving persons apprenticeship programs, giving persons the opportunity to have access to certain things. So there's so many things we could be doing. And before you called me and we spoke, Betty, I was actually working on a long, long article on all the things that communities can do on a local level to really address the concerns that are affecting their community. There's so many things that I can talk about. But again, at the end of the day, when you operate in a rule of law and you operate under a system of laws, if this is the social contract that we have constructed, we have to engage at a local level with persons who utilize those fundings to fund neighborhoods, to fund roads, and to create a stronger, more just community for all persons.
I am going to simply end with a quote from our national president, Derek Johnson. And that is, very simply, we must protest peacefully, demand persistently, and fight politically. But most of all, we must vote in November.
This is Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, and we just heard excerpts from the Forum on Hate Crimes and Police Brutality, hosted by Betty Andrews for the Iowa-Nebraska NAACP. Thanks to all who granted us permission to rebroadcast from that forum. One of the characteristics of protests all over the world was the act of giving the knee. Yesterday's Des Moines Register showed a black policeman and a white policeman kneeling together.
We are fortunate that Al Womble, who was with us last week,
is with us again to describe a different story of giving the knee that took place in Des Moines Monday night. Welcome, Al. Thank you for zooming in and to tell us about it.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for having me once again. And I hope everybody is having a safe and happy day.
How did it go last night in Des Moines? Do you know?
Last night it was peaceful with no clashes or interactions. And so I'm very happy about that. A good friend, Representative Akeo Dul Samad, was there. And he said that things essentially wound up peacefully. Individuals chant and speak, and then eventually broke up. So that's what we would love to see when it comes to people engaging in public discourse and you know, protest, that you go out there, you make your point, you march, and that it ends peacefully. And that, I think, is just showing tremendous progress. On Monday night, after we had finished a program down at the Capitol, which ended peacefully, and possibly 3,000 people there, had some wonderful speakers. Then some of the young folk stuck around. They marched from the Capitol down to the police station. And then when they got to the police station, they had an interaction with the police, sometimes got fairly testy. And at one point in time, there was a police officer who did kneel in front of the protesters. And at that point, many of the protesters, gratitude for that person for doing that. And we're reaching out to shake this person's hand, to give them high fives. This person was reaching back to them. Unfortunately, another officer grabbed that individual and pulled them to their feet. And at that time, I have to really salute the WASP commander, because the line commander there then beat and dismissed him and sent him home. And, you know, that shows me that despite some of the clashes and issues that have happened, there are people who are willing to try and work with individuals, people who recognize individuals who make bad actions and then act upon that. But I guess my favorite story of kneeling really comes from the previous night on Sunday night at Merle Hay Mall. It was pretty intense. But at one point in time, there are a group of myself, protesters, and some police officers who all kind of knelt there in the middle of Douglas in a prayer circle, and was led by one young man in the middle of the circle who, when you heard him praying, his heartfelt prayers, his speech, you could hear the emotion emanating from his voice. You could feel it shaking through the crowd. And we're all kneeling there together, you know, arms around one another. And you could hear some people, you know, crying gently in the crowd. Just the fact that officers, protesters, myself and others gathered in this prayer circle all together on our knees was incredibly moving for me, and showed that, you know, there are great people on there. And the great thing for me was, you know, later that night, the great representative of the KL, Abdul Samad, led some of the young folks. They got the mic, and we let them speak. And we tried to pass the mic as best we could from one individual to another, letting each speak in their own turn and allowing them to, you know, voice their anger and their frustrations without attempting really, you know, to curtail them. And, you know, that was, I think, also what was needed. Allow these folks to speak. And that really, you know, was something that was pretty incredible. And I think a lot of these kids had some really poignant things to say.
Well, I think that's been the message that I've been hearing throughout this is listen, listen. You haven't been listening.
Absolutely. I think that's part of the frustration from, you know, these young folks. And I must admit, I've been down there night after night. And at times, yes, things have gone not the way that we would prefer that they do. You know, there have been clashes. But, you know, a majority of the individuals who are protesting, and once again, I say the majority, not everyone, the majority are people who want to hear their voices heard. The majority of people who are living with frustration and anger, they are people who have not seen major systemic change that is going to bring about, you know, an end to some of the racist, you know, policies and issues that are facing individuals. And they just want to be heard, and they should be heard. They have a right to be heard. There's a very small group of individuals who are agitators in there that sometimes when things calm down and, you know, we're getting to a good point, then suddenly those agitators will flare up. And I have to say that some of those agitators that I've seen firsthand with my own eyes are not Black people. There are other individuals in the crowd who start yelling things, throwing things, and I have to say there are also some young people in the crowd who have worked hard to try and stop those individuals who are agitators, who have tried to truly lead this group. But unfortunately, when, you know, a couple people create bad acts, that creates a response. And that's very, very unfortunate. But, you know, our country was founded on individuals who created a certain amount of unrest and protest. It's founded on the fact that you have the right to say what you feel you need to say. And gathering in large groups and being able to say that is part of our rights in this country. It's just that we hope and pray that when it comes to the other acts that are moments of violence or mayhem, that, you know, those can be stopped. Yeah, there are leaders on all levels that are trying to get in there and participate and see what they can do to help. With the anger that some of these folks are expressing, it is legitimate. It needs to be addressed by all levels of government. I heard your previous guest talk about how the important local government is. It's extraordinarily important. This needs to be addressed on the local, state, and federal level, and it needs to be dealt with in a very timely manner. We can't do the same thing we've often done in politics, which is drag our feet, go to meeting after meeting after meeting, and then in the end, nothing happens. That's part of the frustration that is driving these young people. They see this happen again and again, and nothing takes action. And I think we are at a point where there are many people who are agreeing that action has to be taken now. And I certainly hope that is true.
All hands on deck, as they
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you, Al Womble, for coming in and giving us your firsthand account.
My pleasure.
And you've been listening to Local Talk on KHOY Community Radio, where we explore the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. We've been your hosts, Pat Schlarbaum and Susan Franson. Other voices you heard were Carolyn Raffensperger, Betty Andrews, Ako Abdul-Samad, Isaiah Knox, Joshua Barr, and
Al Womble.
Local Talk will be rebroadcast at 7 p.m. at noon. The Ames Public Library will present a special program to brighten your day in this time of COVID-19. You can listen to today's Local Talk show and any of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. There you will also find information about our guests, along with relevant links to today's stories.
Local Talk was engineered by Michael Murphy. Thank you, Michael. And our theme song is Backtracking by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. Other music you heard was Change is Gonna Come by Sam Cooke and a bit of Ebony and Ivory by Paul McCartney and Stevie Wonder.
If you enjoyed the show, tell your friends. Remember, your participation as listener and your generous contributions are what make KHOI possible. Thanks for listening, and see you again on the radio.
On the radio.